Blog Talk Radio.
It's too young to be on that bridge. It's too young to be sitting on a cage. Too young to be lost away. You're too young. Welcome to the Healthy Baby Boomers Network Blog Talk Radio Show. I am your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, licensed mental health counselor, spiritual relationship healing expert, helping men and women heal their bodies and their relationships through love, author of the book Love Me, Touch Me, Heal Me, and the romantic novel Love in the Blizzard of Life, Healing Through Love seminar leader and director of HealthyBabyBoomersNetwork.com. This show is all about living your dreams, fulfilling your life purpose, and creating and sustaining love and health and total well-being for the rest of your life, no matter how old you are right now. In every episode, I speak with vibrant, exciting, and positive men and women who are proving that life can, and often does, get better and better as we reach our 40s, 50s, 60s, and beyond. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with Joanna Barclay, President of TLC Foundation, a company of certified professional facilitators and culture change consultants, helping leaders build high-performing, values-driven organizations. Having graduated from the University of Ottawa with an honors BA in Management of Information Systems, she has studied widely in the areas of organizational development, facilitation, leadership, and learning. She has earned her certificate in organization development from the NTL Institute of Applied Behavioral Science, is a certified cultural assessment and transformation consultant with the Barrett Values Center, an International Association of Facilitators certified professional facilitator, an Institute of Cultural Affairs certified technology of participation facilitator, and is a certified level 2 personal strengths consultant. Joanna works with clients in areas of cultural transformation, strategic planning, organizational change, leadership development, team building, and training, and she certainly has the credentials to do that. In her soon-to-be-published book, Conscious Culture, How to Build a High-Performing Workplace Through Values, Ethics, and Leadership, Joanna Barclay shares 30 years of business transformation experience. Leaders learn how to awaken the life force energy within values, ethics, and leadership that ignite performance and employee engagement. With the ABC of cultural change, she provides a blueprint for leaders to consciously create a high-performing, values-driven organization. Leaders will learn the importance of facilitative leadership and how to tap into the wisdom of the group, unify employees, and connect hearts and minds to create a wow culture. So my reaction to speaking with Joanna is wow. Welcome, Joanna.
Thank you very much, Erica. It's a pleasure to be on the radio with you this afternoon. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you about the book and why I wrote the book and you know, my passion for helping people become and all they can be and reach their full potential. We spend so many hours a day at work that to not be happy and to be disengaged, to me, I feel, is just so sad. And so I feel, you know, there's definitely a way that leaders can help create very positive, very healthy, very dynamic, very engaged workplaces simply by focusing on the culture and investing a little bit in their own leadership style and skills to create what I call high-performing workplaces. That's all through conscious leadership and creating conscious culture.
Wow. Well, what I've realized is there are a lot of people that are not happy at work, and it's not just the employees. The employers and the managers and, you know, leaders can be very unhappy. They may not know how to lead properly.
For sure. You know, you mentioned the leaders in the book. In chapter 7 of the book, I actually include a health study that was done by APEX for Canada. And APEX stands for the Association of Professional Executives in the Federal Government Service. So that's the Government of Canada. And they had 2,500 executives fill out or participate in this health study that came out last year. And so this is all the executives, you know, the senior executives responsible for all the programs and all the employees. And for them, believe it or not, 32% of them are disengaged. You know, they're not connected to their job. They don't feel that they're doing their job well or actually interested in doing their job well, which is a really sad state of affairs. It all has to do with organizational health. And, you know, not feeling supported by their colleagues, not feeling supported by their superiors, not really being able to do the things that they feel qualified and capable of doing. So, you know, it isn't just the staff who are sometimes disengaged and unhappy. It's, you know, if you as an individual are not happy, then whatever position you are in life, it's going to affect everybody around you. So whether you're an employer, whether you're an employee, whether you're a husband, whether you're a wife, whether you're a best friend, girlfriend, sister, brother, right? It all comes down into your own personal state of mind and state of being. And so it's really important to focus on that and to focus on yourself and to figure out why you're not happy and what you need to be doing to become happier, right, in life.
It's amazing to hear you say that because as a relationship therapist, I'm always talking about how the most important thing is to know yourself and accept yourself and make whatever changes you want to make. So let me ask you, what led you into this field? Like, how did you get to develop this foundation?
Actually, my website is tlcfacilitation.com. It's not a foundation. We're an organization, and that's the company name. I do my service work for the International Association for Human Values, which is a not-for-profit humanitarian educational global organization. And I got involved with them about 10 years ago when I took a program called the Art of Living course. And this was introduced to me by a colleague. And we were talking about meditation one day, and I was, you know, very much attracted to meditation and yoga. I started doing yoga 15 years ago when I first became a facilitator, because I was told at that time that you need a very strong sixth sense when you're a facilitator, because you can be in a room of 50 to 200 people, and your spidey sense needs to be very aware of what's happening around you. And so I was told that yoga helps you develop your sixth sense. So I started doing yoga, and then 3 years later, I met somebody who was a teacher of the Art of Living program, and he was telling me about this silence course they have at their ashram, the North American Retreat Center in Saint-Mathieu du Parc in Quebec. And I said, I was just really attracted to it. And he said, well, you have to course first. It's like the part one. It's called the Art of Living. And I said, well, what's involved in that course? And he said, well, you know, it involves yoga and breathing and meditation. I said, well, I already do those. And and that was, you know, we kind of left it at that. And then 3 months later, I contacted this colleague again. He said, you know what? Today, the founder, Sri Sri Ravi Shankar, is actually in town giving an intro talk at the National Library. I said, oh, cool. Why don't I go see it, check it out? So I went to this intro talk. And, you know, the leader was talking, you know, about all sorts of things that I had sort of already started to delve into because of my interest in yoga. But then he led a meditation. And I said, oh, my God. I went so deep and went to such a beautiful place when, you know, when the time was up and to bring us back into the room, I didn't want to leave. It was just so beautiful. But anyways, you know, all good things end, unfortunately. As I was leaving the room, My friend was standing beside the leader, and I went up to him. I said, thanked him very much, shook his hand, and then went on my way. Well, a month later, my friend called me up, and he said, you know that program I told you about, the Art of Living course? he said, you know, we have an international teacher coming to teach it in September. Would you like to come? And I said, well, actually, and he told me the date. I had four other things happening on that particular weekend. I said, sorry, I can't do it. He calls me up the day before the course. And believe it or not, all four things had evaporated. And I knew, you know, I was aware enough at the time that, you know, listen to the universe, because when all four things evaporate, you know, it had, like, opened the door for me, and I knew I needed to go through and take it. So sure enough, when I mentioned to my friend all four things had evaporated, of course, he said, oh, well, that means you're free to take a course. I said, yeah, okay. So I did. And I was blown away by the course. I was blown away by the tools and techniques that I was taught in the course, you know, to release stress, because it's breathing techniques, you know, to release the stress and connect with yourself. And I just was so aware of the power of it. And because at that time, I'd been facilitating for 3 years. I'd been doing a lot of organizational development work. And I knew that if, as an individual, you are strong and you're self-aware, that is hugely powerful for a whole organization, you know, not just yourself and your family,
I'm fascinated by listening to you, because on the one hand, you have such an intellectual approach, and you can really reach those people that are in their mind and only think intellectually and have to have research and validation, and you also have that side that can go deep into the soul, spirit, the depth of our being. So you bring a lot.
Believe it or not, I connect more with my heart self. But because I work in organizations with senior leaders, I've learned how to take it to the mind and to be able to present in that fashion. But I truly believe that.
You don't realize how important that is, because there are a lot of people that can't be reached. They call it woo-woo stuff, you know, and they need to be reached.
Yeah. Yeah, whenever I talk with leaders now and they start talking about soft stuff, you know, I share with them, you know, let's stop for one moment, because the soft stuff is actually the hard stuff. So let's just call it intangibles, right? Because emotional intelligence
That's a good word.
Is really, emotional intelligence is really what it's all about, right? Especially when it comes to healthy, high-performing cultures. Cultures are what? They're your values and your behaviors that are being lived in the workplace. And values such as loyalty and trust and respect, are they not at the core of people performing well? Because if I don't trust my manager, if I don't trust my colleagues, guess what? I'm probably not going to stay there very long, right? When you ask people what's their number one value to them in the workplace or in life, what comes up the most is respect and trust. And those are
the
what?
The thing about trust,
people might call them.
It's something in relationships. It's not always based on whether someone cheated or not. It's something else. It can be those subtle words, the subtle put-downs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, and it's the same thing in the workplace, right? If you don't trust your colleagues or your team members or other teams or your clients, you know, think about how much more process people put on top when they don't trust. And it actually slows down people's behavior, therefore causing more cost to the organization, making it less performing and less competitive. So the more trust you have and respect and open communication, the more high-performing you will be. So
how do you recognize lack of trust, or what are some symptoms of that, and how do you get them to feel the trust?
That is a million-dollar question, but very, very important. Just go into yourself. I mean, when you meet somebody, do you trust them? Why do you trust them? How have you developed that trust? I mean, trust is something that is developed over time, right? Quite often when you meet somebody first off, you start talking about your background and your history, and, you know, there's some kind of connection and rapport that is developed, right? And people are trained, you can actually train yourself on how to develop rapport with other people. Sales training, for example, will help you develop rapport. But also, there's that angle of, you know, how trusting are you as an individual? you know, do you give trust easily or are you more cautious? So if you want to trust people, then you have to be trusting. You have to be trustworthy, right? And that's something that people need to recognize, that whatever values that they want to experience in their environment, they also have to live those themselves. They have to be the change they want to see. You know, we've heard that expression from Mahatma Gandhi for years. But to really live it and imbibe it means, you know, if you want respect, then you need to give respect. You know, if you want trust, you need to give trust.
But there's something else that I'm realizing as you're talking, that a leader really has the responsibility to recognize which people don't trust well and to find a way to, like, help that person to trust more.
Yeah.
Rather
it's
than
all
to
about
just
relationship
assume.
Building. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Building relationships is critical for leaders and for team leaders, anybody who's in that position. And I believe that everybody is a leader and everybody has got leadership responsibilities in life. You need to be able to lead yourself first before you can lead others. So how much do you trust yourself and recognize the value of trust? Or are you a more cautious person? Right? And so you can learn from yourself, learn from how you trust others and what it takes for you to trust. Because some, you know, there's like a sliding scale. I don't think everybody values trust or experiences it on the same level. I think some people are more cautious than others. You know, you might call them, when you believe people, there's a word I'm grasping for
naive.
Right now. Not just naive, but you believe everything people say. What's the word
gullible.
For that? Gullible.
You mean someone
gullible? Okay.
Right. So what I was going to say
some
is
people,
that
you know,
there's a positive and a negative to trusting. You can be too trusting,
yeah.
or too
yeah,
untrusting.
Yeah. Exactly. So if you're too trusting, people might see you as gullible, right? If you're not trusting enough, you might be seen as cautious, right? And so there's these sliding scales of just how we are. It's human nature, right? Some people are born with these different value sets that are developed as we grow up and from our personal experiences. And so, you know, there are relationship awareness tools that I use to help people understand their motivational values and to get them to see where they are on this sliding scale. Because your motivational values are kind of like connected to your DNA. They make up who you are, and they actually influence your behavior. So, you know, if you're a team leader and you really want to understand the members of your team, doing a strength deployment inventory, it's an exercise from Personal Strengths Canada. You know, you're asked 10 questions when things are working well and 10 questions when you're in conflict. And the reason why they ask questions in those two different states is because when you're in conflict, your behavior and motivation changes. That's why sometimes you'll see Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde in people's behavior.
Right.
They'll go, whoa! Where did that person come from, you know? So understanding your motivational values is like a first step to self-awareness. And if you do it as a team in a group environment, then the team leader will learn the motivational values of their team members, and team members will learn the motivational values of each other. And
hugely
powerful for...
So, Anna, is that what you mean by a values-driven workplace?
Not just no, yes and no. A values-driven workplace is an organization that has decided on maybe three or four key values that they're going to focus on to achieve a desired future. So let's say collaboration is important to you, trust, enthusiasm, and leadership. Let's say those are four key values that you've decided for whatever reason, you know, quite often organizations and leaders do strategic plans. And in order to achieve the desired future, let's say the vision that you've put in place for 2 to 3 years down the road, you have to do certain strategies and you have to make sure that people are behaving and doing certain things, right? So a values-driven organization means there's certain values that we have decided on are really going to help us achieve this future state. So let's say you know you need stronger teamwork and collaboration. So you could decide on the value of collaboration and then define certain behaviors that you need to see in order to ensure that you're, you know, everybody's living and valuing that value of collaboration. So a value-driven organization means there's certain values that you've picked that are going to help you achieve your desired future. And you really do live these values. You know, they come into play whenever you make decisions. You make decisions based on your values, and how is it going to reinforce the values that you've picked. So the values are really, your values and your culture really become a capital resource for the organization.
That leads to the next question. Like, what is cultural transformation? You use these
question.
Large terms, but they really are
what
saying
I mean?
Something important.
Yeah, well, it is. It's huge. You know, it's like personal transformation, right? What is personal transformation? Well, something inside of you changes, and you see the world in a different way, in a different light. Your mindset shifts, your values shift, and your behavior shifts because of an internal transformation. Well, cultural transformation is very similar because culture within an organization is like the personality of an organization. It's the way we do things, right? The way managers lead, the way we work together, the way we talk, the way we joke, you know, it's everything. And that's why culture transformation can be so very challenging, because there's different aspects that need to transform, that need to change from the inside out in order for the organization to really change, okay? So cultural transformation can include personal change of the leaders. So leaders' behaviors and mindsets will change in certain ways. So let's say, for example, you wanted greater collaboration and teamwork, and you have a leader who's used to being very autocratic and making the only person making the decisions. Well, if you are embracing collaboration and teamwork, well, guess what that might mean? That might mean that the leader might now need to actually model that new behavior and start making decisions based on input from other people, right? Being more facilitative and more collaborative themselves. So the leader needs to model new...
Or be removed from the position.
Yeah, exactly. Because leaders have to be the change they want to see. So it starts with personal alignment of the leaders and then alignment of systems and processes. So let's say you used to make decisions in one way and now you want it to be more collaborative. Well, that might change the way and how you involve people in making a decision, right? And then it also might mean your mission and vision has to be in alignment with your new culture or the culture that you want. So there's different things that you need to think about when it comes to cultural transformation. It's really changing the DNA of an organization and how people work together. There might be some mindset shifts that need to happen in order for people to really value and change their behavior. They have to truly believe it in their heart of hearts to do this. I'll give you an example.
Okay,
so
we have another question here. Sorry to keep cutting you off, but time is short, and I want you to share all this valuable information. You have a term that you've described, the ABC of cultural change. So I would love to hear what that is.
Okay, great. I love it. A is for awareness through measurement. So you need to assess your culture, and I've got cultural values assessments that help you do that. Because what you measure, you can manage. Very important for leaders to be able to know where they're at today and where they want to go to. So awareness through measurement. The B stands for belongingness. Belongingness through engagement. So when I want to connect with other people and I want them to truly be engaged in an organization, how do I help them bring their full selves to work? And so it's through that sense of belongingness and caring for people and really understanding what's important to them that people feel engaged. And so it's belongingness through engagement. And then the C stands for commitment. Commitment through alignment. Okay, people want to feel that their values are in alignment with the organizational values, as well that you've got an alignment of with your mission and vision, that people know what they're doing, why they're doing it, and where they're headed. So it takes awareness and belongingness in order to have commitment. So to really have people who are truly committed to what you are doing, you need to have that personal alignment with their values and their mission and vision. So the ABC is really the blueprint, right? You need to have the awareness, you need to have belongingness, and you need to have commitment. And if you have all those three, then you will surely be a very high-performing, values-driven organization.
Wow. So how does an organization, what do you do? How do you help them to create this?
Yeah. Well, I have a 9-step process. And the first few steps are really preparing for cultural transformation. And what I do is I start with the leadership team first, because the real change starts at the top. And they need to understand what are the compelling reasons for change. So quite often what we do first is something called an environmental scan, where we go out and I can either meet with their stakeholders or just have conversations with the leadership team. But the environmental scan, what it does is it asks, you know, 5 essential questions. What's happening in your external environment? Okay, that's changing around you. Because if you're going to go through transformation, which can be very challenging, you have to do it for a real good reason. You know, it's going to cost you money. And you need to really understand, well, why do we need to change? So an example might be technology and social media, right? We need to change the way that we're communicating with our clients, because technology is changing around us, right? That's a real simple one. Or the environment going green, things like that. The next thing is really understanding your clients, the marketplace. What are your clients asking for? Okay, and because if they're asking for certain things of you, it might need to change your business imperatives, your business initiatives. So that's the third question. What do we need to change in terms of the way we're doing business to meet our client requests, our client requirements, because of the changing environment? And then when you get these new business initiatives happening, well, that might change the way the organization is structured, how we work together. So again, you could get down to that level. What are some of the systems and processes or skills, new training that people might need? And then that goes down to another level. Well, if we have these new systems and processes, what in our culture needs to change in order for us to really live and fulfill these new business initiatives? Would you believe 9 out of 10 strategic initiatives fail because they fail to change the behavior of their staff, which speaks to culture? They fail to change the way people are working together. Because if you don't, I mean, how can you expect different results if you continue to do the same thing? Right? That's Einstein's definition of insanity.
I would agree with couples, that there are a lot of methods where you go through little skills and you just do these things like automatically rather than making an internal change. And it never lasts.
Exactly. Yeah. So what I've been talking about so far has been the external changes, right? External environment, external clients, external business initiative, external systems. Now, culture goes internal. It goes internal because then the next question is, okay, what are the behaviors that need to change in our leaders and our staff? And then the next layer down, okay, if we're going to change the behavior, what in our mindset and values need to change in the leaders and staff? So once you get down to that really internal level and you hear from your different stakeholders and you hear from your staff and you hear from different leaders around you, guess what? Your mindset starts to shift because you've gone through all of these questions. You've got much more awareness now for what needs to change and why, that you can then identify what are the compelling reasons for change. So you then that's the first really important starting point, is really understanding the why. Because people won't change unless the why is compelling enough.
So important, because so many times, because I taught in a college for many years, and a new president came in and a new administration, and they just made these arbitrary changes. People don't like that.
No, not at all. The why is very, very important. Yeah, and then once they understand the compelling reasons for change, I then share with them, okay, where is your culture today? What's your baseline? And that's why we often do what's called a cultural values assessment. And so I'm certified with the Barrett's Values Center to do their cultural values assessment. And that, you know, it can assess 15 people up to thousands of people. 3 simple questions that are online. Takes people only 15 minutes, if that, to answer those 3 simple questions. And then the reports that you get are quite amazing information. And then the third step is really debriefing those reports. Why did people pick? So the 3 questions are, what are your top 10 personal values? So I want to find out what's really important to people and will engage them in the workplace. So that's the first question. Second question is, what are you currently experiencing? Pick the top 10 values that you're currently experiencing in values and behaviors in your organization. And that's very powerful because I find out both the positive strengths of the organization and I also find out the limiting values that are actually causing something called entropy, which are the values that actually disengage people and frustrate them, and they're not able to bring their full selves to work because of values such as silo mentality or blame or manipulation or control. You know, those values are all, people get to pick 10 out of a list of 100. So in that list of 100, you've got both positive and limiting values. And the third very important question is, what's the desired culture you would like to have? And that's so important because it's like the road forward. It's like the antidote. This is what people want. And then you debrief these reports. The most important part is the debrief. People talking about what they want. People having, probably for the first time in their lives, conversation about their values and why they're so important to them. And the power in those conversations is that values connect people on the heart level. Not just the head, but the heart. And when you connect people on the heart level, you know what happens, right? That internal cohesion gets created. That's where trust gets created. That's where respect gets created. You have these open communications. So you develop these incredibly strong relationships as a result of doing the debrief. People understand where you're coming from, what your mindset is, and also mindset shift because they're hearing so much information from other people. And you can then ask the question, okay, what?
Mm-hmm. Joanna, what I want to say is, wow, you really have so much to offer, but our time is ending. So can you share with the audience how they can get in touch with you?
Definitely. They can send me an email, Joanna, J-O-A-N-N-A, at TLC Facilitation. So it's T as in Tom, L as in Larry, C as in Charlie, and it stands for Teams, Leaders, and Culture, and then facilitation.com. So Joanna
at TLC. Just say it once more.
Joanna at TLC Facilitation.com. And that's also the name of my website, TLC Facilitation.com. And if you go to my website, on the homepage, I have a free download of a white paper that I've written that talks about everything that we've talked about today and on the call. And in a few months' time, when my book is available, they'll be able to sign up for a copy of the book.
Wow. That's a wonderful word that you use because you have so much to help people with. You can really transform the way the world is doing business. And you are doing this on a global level.
Thank you so much, Erica, for this opportunity to share the information and asking the questions. And hopefully people will be interested, and I can help them either by speaking engagements or doing consulting or leadership development. Those are sort of the three areas of my business that I help leaders and organizations build high performing values and organizations through values, ethics, and leadership.
I want to thank you so much for coming today. I am your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, saying goodbye for now. Please visit my website, healthybabyboomersnetwork.com, to get your free report, How to Live to 100 and Beyond. Contact me at drericagoodstone.com for counseling, coaching, or upcoming courses, and hire me to speak at your next event. And check out my books at amazon.com. Goodbye for now.